I'm your host, Dr. Karen Kann, author of the number one bestseller, Guide to Healing Chronic Pain, A Holistic Approach. And if you are a sensitive soul, we are here to help you, inspire you, empower you to manifest the life of your dreams, whether it's radiant health, healthy relationships, prosperity, or peace of mind. So thank you so much for joining me. And if you're new to the tribe and you don't already have my free gift, which is a clearing and protection spray formula, I'd love to have you take advantage of this. This spray helps to clear the energy from your auric field, from your body, so you feel calmer, more centered, more grounded, more confident. You can get it free at clearingspray.com. Sorry, that's clearingandprotectionspray.com. A new URL, folks. So still need to memorize that. So clearingandprotectionspray.com. Now, today I have a very special guest, Taylor Conroy, and he is the CEO of the Idea Collective. And you might be wondering, who is this person? Is this person a healer? You know, because so many of the people that we have on the show are healers. But this is very special to me because I call it part of my Spiritual Entrepreneur Series. Because as people following the show know, I'm very passionate about helping sensitive souls really harness those sensitivity gifts as a superpower so they can lead amazing lives and they can make changes to the world and having a great life themselves, you know. And that's the thing. A lot of the sensitive souls that I come across are suffering from their sensitivity, and they never really, quote-unquote, make it in the real world so that they are helping lots of other people. And Taylor, someone who I've met along the path, who is doing just that. And this is very exciting for me because Taylor is what I would call a sensitive, empathetic male. And, you know, a lot of our children growing up, male children, do not get the support that I prefer they have growing up. So they can really use that sensitivity in a good way. And now Taylor is helping so many people get their magic out there through the TEDx stage, and is a wonderful coach and has this amazing business. And so, you know, he's a sensitive person who has taken advantage of his sensitivity as a gift and now is helping a lot of people. So I was super inspired meeting Taylor, and I wanted to share his story and his life with everyone here so you can be inspired and say, hey, wow, if he could do it, I could do it too. So let me tell you a little bit about Taylor before I officially welcome him to the show. You know, he was a firefighter in his early 20s, and from there he feels like it's a natural expansion to dive into, you know, the impact space even further. And he did his first TEDx talk in 2011, and he started a fundraising company that funded 500 schools and libraries in 14 developing countries, and then an impact travel company that built 150 homes for families in Latin America. And most of us, you know, by the time of age 37, we were still struggling with, like, trying to pay our first apartment and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it's amazing what he's been able to do in a period of time where, like I said, a lot of people haven't even figured out their lives yet. So he's impacting millions of people. And what's really cool is for him, it's almost like, you know, play, because he's helping other people get their message out. He's so passionate about it. He's traveling around the world and having a good time and harnessing not just his superpowers, but knowing his sensitivity and how to change his lifestyle so that it works for him. Okay, so he's not somebody who's just trying to get rid of his sensitivity so he's normal and feels like everybody else. No, what's inspiring about Taylor is that he is able to respect and honor his sensitivity, not try to get rid of it. So without further ado, welcome Taylor to the show.
Dr. Karen, there's no place I'd rather be.
I'm so excited that you're here. Thank you for spending your time with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Excellent, excellent. So I would love to know, when did you realize that maybe you were more, quote unquote, sensitive than others, other boys, other children? Like, how old were you when you had that realization?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, I've had that realization 1,000 times, been reminded 1,000 times. And I'd say one moment that really stands out still is I was probably 11 years old, and I was with my dad, and he had told me all these stories about how he had grown up, like, shooting squirrels and shooting gophers and stuff like that and selling squirrel tails, which still sounds super weird to me. But back then I was like, you know, I wanted to be tough and I wanted to be like my dad. Right. So we went out and
right.
bought me this, a 22 caliber rifle. I grew up in Western Canada, right. So there's lots of room for shooting stuff. And we went out, we were going to go hunting and he points out this squirrel. He's like, there's one. And I'm like, all right, cool. I guess now's when I shoot this thing. For no apparent reason. Anyways, there's this squirrel. Hunting just blows my mind. The whole subject, we don't need to like digress too much, but just say, I'm standing there and there's this squirrel like 30 feet away, maybe 10 feet up in a tree. And it's just sitting there minding its own business. And I, you know, aim this rifle and I think I'd shot some targets before. So I knew what I was doing. And I shoot this squirrel and it shoots it like right in the shoulder and it falls out of the tree. So it's not dead. It's now like squirming around on the ground and I'm fucking losing it. This is bananas. I'm like, why on earth are we doing this? And by the way, why on earth am I doing this? Why am I shooting this thing that did nothing? And it's part of nature. It's part of the whole grand scheme of things. I felt that at an early age and it just, to be honest, like robbed me of a lot of my connection. Like, I couldn't believe it. And I didn't want to look like a baby in front of my dad. So I just like kind of was like, okay, now we go up and shoot it so it's dead. And it totally traumatized me. And that carried through to everything. I couldn't even fish. I couldn't even, like, kill a fish. You know what I mean? Like, I was so sensitive that I would even feel bad for breaking branches in nature. Like, I grew up highly sensitive. If I saw some sort of, like, a violent scene in a movie, I would cry. My parents still make fun of me for crying in this movie, like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. He gets sent off on this.
Yeah.
Do you remember that time
true.
They send him off on the freaking iceberg? They're like,
yeah.
Time for you to not be part of the tribe anymore, Rudolph. Beat it.
Oh.
Here's an iceberg. Never come back. I'm like, wait, why are they sending him away?
I know.
I just bawled. And I could, like, just thinking of that moment for me, I was just, for years, I would just cry. And anyways, so I've noticed it a whole bunch of times, and I would say the beginning was like, yeah, way back then, like 11 years old when I had to shoot a freaking squirrel for no reason.
Wow. I personally think boys have it a lot tougher than girls. I mean.
Yeah. It's probably all relative. Maybe early on it could be a little bit tougher, but yeah, it's from the sensitive part, like growing up and going to middle school and feeling bullied and rejected like all the time, but which is just kind of a normal thing for us guys, like make fun of each other and exclude and include and do whatever we're doing, which women obviously do as well. But yeah, I had a very emotional childhood that no one saw because I stuffed it all down inside because I didn't feel like it was anywhere near accepted. It felt very, very different.
Right. Exactly. Now, do you feel now as an adult that, do you have siblings? Is either of your parents, do you feel, are sensitive in the closet or were in the closet?
In the closet? I would say I would definitely be the most sensitive out of our foursome, like my parents and my sister and I. And as an adult, like what you were saying and getting to earlier is like harnessing this sensitivity. This sensitivity in my mind is this amazing form of energy. Right? Like it, and mm-hmm. to be an entrepreneur, to be a passionate advocate, to be an activist, to be whatever, you have to have an incredible amount of energy. And so the sensitivity that we have, in my mind, is a form of that energy. And when it's harnessed and directed in the right way, it actually makes us, in my mind, it's like a full-on superpower, right? So it's like, you know, Superman, he's got all these amazing powers and skills and all that kind of stuff, which makes him amazing. And he's got kryptonite, right? Which doesn't affect other people. Like humans aren't really affected by kryptonite, but it brings him to his knees. Right. And that's kind of us. We have our kryptonite in my mind is like loud noises, big crowds and basically anything else. I'm so sensitive. It's so annoying at times, bright lights, walking to a drugstore. I'm like, why do they have these lights? I don't understand.
Yes. Or Best Buy. I bet you love Best Buy.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Any of those places, I just cringe even thinking about it. And that being said, we have this like deep, deep, deep store of energy that we can harness And if we harness it right, like the, us like crying or getting mad or getting sad or all of those things, those are all like an expulsion of energy, right? And if we can harness those in the right way, like you said, like create an environment in which we thrive, like somewhere safe, we have our cave to go back to. And if we harness all of that and direct it towards our career, whether it be making a radio show or helping people in all the different ways that you help people, or it be like raising money, fundraising, we have an ability to tap into an emotional tool set that most people don't have. And we can therefore show up at, in my mind, like a 12 out of 10. And because we can show up at a 12 out of 10, then we can actually bring people to show up at a 10 out of 10. Does that make sense?
Very cool. Yeah, I've never heard of it said that way, but I love that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you've probably heard of it the way that most sensitive people talk about it, which is crying about it, whining about it, complaining about it. And it's like, holy shit, you were given this one life and you were given the ability to be sensitive as a crazy fucking gift. Excuse me, let me know if I can't drop F-bombs on this radio show. But it is a crazy gift. We cry about it. Oh, my God, I don't like going to Best Buy. I don't like going to Best Buy. And you and I are in closer touch with what's happening in nature at every single moment than the vast majority of the planet. I look at the ocean and it takes nothing to make me happy. All I need to do is just look at the ocean. All I need to do is look at a freaking leaf and be like, oh my God, this is where we are. We're on this earth that is living, breathing. It has blood inside of it, and namely oil and water. We are living on this like incredible living being. And we, because we're sensitive, when we're not in a fluorescent filled room, we get to feel that at a much deeper level than other people. And don't you look at, if I'm feeling sad, it's for the people that don't feel that. It's for the people that don't feel connected to the squirrel and they shoot the squirrel and they don't care about shooting the squirrel. It's the people that can hurt other people because they don't realize that we're like the same organism, even though our physical eyes can't see it. If I'm sad, it's because I feel bad for people that are that disconnected, that they walk through this life kind of eyes half shut and thinking that we're separate. And then that leads, in my mind, to the separate is like the root of all suffering. And we, as sensitive beings, inherently don't have that separateness. So it takes us far less time in our life to come back to the oneness that we innately feel, where other people, it could take lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes.
Ah, so well said. I'm having difficulty composing myself for the rest of this interview because I'm so inspired and teary-eyed from what you just said. Thank you.
Yeah, you have like Dr. Karen, and if other people are feeling the way that you're feeling, because obviously they are, because they're following you, because they resonate with you, everyone out there that is sensitive as fuck, like I am, who like today was like wigging out before this interview because they're doing some construction outside and my whole gut's churning because it's a little bit noisier than I want it to be. And I'm the one who's always like adjusting the lighting, adjusting the sound of the music, walk into a place and the music's like not perfect. I'm like, can we change that? Because it's throwing off my whole rhythm. The nice thing is you're on this earth for a solid amount of time. You're on this earth for like 80 years. So if you're listening to this and you're 20 and you're like a full-on empath, or you're 40 or you're 50, chances are you still got a long time here. And creating an environment that is like safe and nurturing and soft, that lets you create from this like beautiful, soft, warm place, is not that hard. It's like, go to the crystal store, buy a bunch of crystals, get a bunch of sage. Just know, like, I think one of the, just the people listening to your show, Dr. Karen, is like, you give people permission to be empathetic. You give them permission. And what comes along with the permission to be sensitive, in my mind, is the permission to tap into your natural psychic abilities, your natural abilities to touch someone and feel what they're feeling. And because you can feel what they're feeling, the reason you have that empathetic ability is because you are able to heal what they're feeling at the same time. You wouldn't be given the gift of feeling what someone's feeling without being given the gift to help them heal what they're feeling. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a great point. And, Taylor, I'm creating my very first what I call Light Warrior training camp this fall at the Omega Institute. And I'm super excited because it's really about helping people go from that place where they're kind of feeling like, oh, this sensitivity is a curse, I don't know what to do with it, to really giving them an organized way and practice. You know, on how to do that, including what you just mentioned before. We call that like feeling into or intuitive impressioning. It's so useful. I know you've used it a ton in business, but it's not well described. You know, like how do we practically switch gears from just suffering from our sensitivity rather than healing others or ourselves or, you know, tapping into, like, there's so many conflict stories that I could tell you about. Just, I call it transformational telepathy, where we've switched it, like, within 24 hours, you know, because of the ability that we have to know exactly how that other person is feeling and then go beyond that. Like, what's the belief?
You know,
Exactly.
And can I go on a little tangent here for a second about kind of accepting? Okay, so you're like, I don't care what's it about. Go talk. Here's the thing is that I want to give an example of when I went through a really hard time financially, okay? Because, like, the bio that you read for me was wonderful, and it's like, yeah, he's helped build 500 schools all over the world and built 150 homes, and he's really successful in business and blah, 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 which is wonderful, and they're all true. And in addition to that, I've gone through the depths of, like, financial despair. I've had to file bankruptcy personally because I put all my funds, because I was so invested in this company that was building schools all over the world. I put every single bit of money that I had into it. I took out loans of hundreds of thousands of dollars to put into the company, to float the company. And at some point I went completely bankrupt. The only thing that saved me from going completely nuts in that bankruptcy was this moment where I sat there and I was like, you know what? Here I am. This is where I am. At this moment, I am bankrupt at the age of 35. I don't have two nickels to rub together. I'm wearing a pair of pants that my friend gave me, a belt that actually I didn't even think I had a belt, a $6 like Hanes t-shirt from Walmart or something like that. And here I am, period. Not it's bad, not it's good, not it's anything. This is exactly where I am. And for sensitive people, the equivalent to that is going, here I am. I'm on this earth. I'm super sensitive. I pick up on people's energies. Other people's energies affect me. When I go throughout the day, loud noises bother me. Bright lights bother me. These things, that's who you are, period. As long as we fight that, we're actually giving power to the thing that takes our power away, right? And and back to the bankruptcy example, because of that moment of, like, this is where I am, and I'm going to enjoy this moment because this is where I am, then everything changed. This whole, you know, we were talking about the hero's journey for a second before, this journey, the three parts in the let's say, like, the masculine psyche development, they say that the first part, like childhood, is unconscious unity, right? Like, we're unconscious that we're – actually, fuck it, I'm going to leave the male psyche stuff out. It's kind of too tangential. I'll stick on the bankruptcy thing, which is realizing here I am, I'm bankrupt, and now I can actually make the choices of moving out of that position into something else. So I decided that's where I am. So what would someone do when they're completely bankrupt? Well, I need to completely rewire my brain and start retraining my brain on how it thinks about money. Right. And this does relate to the sensitivity in a second here. It was like, so I started listening to books and podcasts and, you know, audio books and reading books over and over and over again to retrain my brain on how to think much more healthy about money. And after that, then I was like, wow, now I'm here. I can afford my own rent. And that's a huge win. And then I was at the point where I could afford, like, fancy groceries, and I could afford the alkaline water, and then I could afford a nicer place. And it was like each step, fully embracing here's where exactly where I am on my journey, gave me, like, this ridiculous amount of freedom and acceptance. And that's what we need to do as sensitive people, is like, here I am. I'm super sensitive. And what am I going to do with it, right? Am I going to use it? Am I going to complain about it? Am I going to be affected by other people's energies for the rest of my life, or am I going to study it? Am I going to go to, like, my inner Hogwarts and figure out what these things are for? Like, you know what I mean? I think that's what you teach people, is, like, these things, these innate abilities that we have, or that we think of innate disabilities, they are innate abilities, right? They're leading us to what we're actually supposed to do in the world, which is heal it. Like, if you're super empathetic, you're here to heal the world. And obviously, first things first, you have to heal yourself. And then you get to heal everybody else.
Right. Well, I'm so happy that you shared that story, because I think that, you know, when people see you now, like, where you're at, like, they – and myself as well, they have naturally – because I used to do it too – all these assumptions about, well, it must be nice, blah, 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 you know. I used to get, well, it must be nice, you're a doctor, right? But they didn't know how much in debt, you know, like, how sick I was, like, what was going on, and how medical school for me was really hard as a sensitive soul. First of all, because all these weird hours, like, some of my colleagues are now, like, you know, 10, 20 years older than I, but was physically so much more resilient to that kind of, you know, schedule. But just all the personalities involved, the depressed surgeon throwing things, the, you know, the all the sickness and the pain and people dying, the 14-year-old dying of cancer, you know, just like all that stuff that we don't really address, you know, for sensitive people how to, you know, do that. So I think that I'm so glad you talked about this, because there are people in my tribe, and maybe not my clients or students, but, you know, people in the bigger tribe that are like, hey, I don't have a place to live. I don't have, you know, I don't have money for groceries. And they're like, what am I going to do? I'm super sensitive, and what am I going to do? And so I think this story is really great that you just validated what I was, you know, teaching, training, and supporting them with.
Exactly.
And you changed your inner world to change your outer world.
Exactly. That's where it all starts. And the complaining thing, just one more kind of note on that. I got back from my first trip to the African continent. I'd visited Kenya and Uganda, and I was looking for this cause to really sink my teeth into, to find something that I could really get behind. At the time, I was in real estate. I was making really good money, and I wanted to donate my money to something that I really believed in. And I got home from this trip, and I was so shaken by that trip. I had this, like, massive reverse culture shock. I remember walking to this grocery store one time, and everyone's kind of walking around getting their groceries. And I had just gotten off of, you know, like, an 8 or 10 hour flight, and from this place where people didn't have clean drinking water, they didn't have enough food to eat, they had zero access to medical supplies and treatments. They were completely bound to the life that their parents had lived, their grandparents had lived, their great-grandparents had lived, which was one of total scarcity and one that could end at any time. You know, like if someone, imagine like playing soccer as a kid and kind of breaking your ankle or something like that, and well, that's it. You're just going to have a hooped ankle for the rest of your life. Here's a stick to walk with, you know?
Wow.
Or imagine like getting malaria, which is an absolutely curable disease, getting malaria, and it's like, oh, well, it's over. Like, you're going to be dead soon. Like, that's just life there. And the, not enough food to eat, not enough clean drinking water. I walk into this grocery store, and I just see this pyramid built out of clean drinking water in bottles, right? Like, this, like, big display. And I was like, oh, my God. And I started looking around, and there's food from all over the world. You can have like olives from Morocco, and you can have cheeses from France, and you can have whatever from anywhere in the world. And I just started crying, and I just could not believe that we have so much of our planet. It's like a crazy, crazy disparity. And so it started generating all of this energy. It was sadness, it was guilt, it was shame, it was anger, it was outrage, it was all of this energy. And so what I started to do is direct that energy at other people and say, like, look, you need to give. You need to give towards building schools and medical clinics and da-da-da-da-da. And no one got it because they weren't on that trip with me, right?
Yeah.
But that energy needed to go somewhere, so it started going towards trying to get other people to give money. And I realized that when you're shooting kind of negative, sad, whiny energy at people, they definitely don't take the action that you're, quote-unquote, wanting them to take. They take the action of, like, running away, right? And the nice thing was that I was like, I had the awareness to know that there's a lot of energy building up in my body and it needed to go somewhere. And I thought, you know what, this energy is going to go somewhere. I need to stop harping at my friends. I started like losing friends over it. This needs to be directed in a positive way. What if I channeled all of this newfound energy, this sadness, anger, and all that stuff into something positive? And that's when the massive shift happened. And that's like a microcosm of potentially everyone who's sensitive here's life, is that there's a shift that needs to happen where we take this energy from being something that we think is hindering us and harness it towards something that's going to be helping us and helping other people. And that was literally the beginning of that fundraising company. I was like, I'm not going to show pictures of what we call like poverty porn, you know, pictures of these kids with distended bellies and flies on their face and stuff like that, trying to guilt people and tap into this negative emotion to get them to give money. What if we start using, of course, like inspiring imagery? What if I start telling people, this is what could happen if you were to build a school, this is what the future would look like, and this is how easy it is? That energy, you know, we talked about how it came from, you know, the fundraising came from doing a TEDx talk and all that stuff. Sure it did. But the energy that fueled all of that came from harnessing all of this sensitive, empathetic energy and putting it towards something positive. And we funded a school. Then we funded another school. Then we funded 20 schools. Then we funded 40 schools. And by we meaning I passed this message on to other people in a positive way. They were inspired, and therefore they started raising money. Then we built 50 schools, then 100, then 200, then 300. We started building libraries, water projects, and girls' scholarships. We started doing anti-sex trafficking work in Cambodia, all from the pivot of this world is so fucked up to, wow, I've got a lot of energy in me. How can I channel it in a positive way that's going to fulfill me and that's going to help the people that are around me? And that shift, and I'm now going to go like kind of off here, but it's like that shift is the shift that we need to make in our planet. We are a culture of complainers. We're whining about the president. We're whining about global warming. We're whining about all of this stuff, yeah. And therefore giving attention to all of the things that we don't want.
Exactly.
What do we want? What is the kind of world that we want to live in? What is the kind of president that we want to have? What is the kind of leadership that we demand in this country? And let's focus on that.
Exactly. Exactly. Well said. Well said. And I love how, you know, that switch from all the emotions you were talking about, you know, building up. And I think a lot of it you could also feel like mass consciousness, you know, the guilt and, you know, all
yeah.
that stuff that we carry in our whole society. And then you're able to
yep.
then tap into your superpowers to go, well, this isn't working to help, you know, the cause because people are running away from me. So then you could feel into, well, what would inspire people to help out, right? So you made that
exactly.
shift. So they could, you can go, well, they, you know, oh, I can't dump all this stuff on them. And then, you know, feel like, oh, I really want to join you. No, it's got to be the other way. And that's what happened to me with my family because I kept harping as a medical doctor, of course, had the MD behind my name, which made it worse. So I was telling them everything they should be doing, right?
Yeah.
And what they should or
yeah.
shouldn't eat. And da-da. And they were just getting so sick and tired of it. And finally, I was like, well, this isn't working. So, you know, I made a pact and agreement that I was just going to focus on my own stuff. If they asked me for medical advice, great, I would give it. But just completely let go of any attachment of them doing anything that I ever said. And so the amazing thing is the quality of relationship improved so much. And they naturally
yeah.
started gravitating to, you know, what I would consider more healthier choices, but I'm not attached to that. And so now we have this great relationship that if they want my help, you know, whatever, I share it with them, but I'm not attached to that. And, you know, they naturally made these positive decisions on their own
exactly.
without me harping on it. I just, it was just so neat. So,
That's, you know what you're saying is so much bigger than what you did with your family. You know what I mean? What you're saying is a representation of what we, all of us need to do in our lives, right? And that's what we need to do on a mass scale is rather than wasting our energy telling people that really don't care and they don't have open ears, is like just completely live the life that we want to emulate. You know, like if
right.
someone asks me, someone says, hey, you know, who do you look up to? What's a hero of yours? I'm like, you know what? The hero of mine is that guy on the New York City subway who's dancing to his music. He's got his eyes closed because he doesn't care what anyone thinks. Or it's,
mm-hmm.
It's Paramahansa Yogananda who started, you know, Self-Realization Fellowship and was spreading Kriya Yoga all throughout the states when he was looked at as like kind of a kook when he first got here, but because he didn't care what people thought, you know, he's doing something bigger than him. And that's like, our job is to stop caring. First of all, stop caring what people think and to stop trying to like push any sort of agenda on anyone else and just completely live our lives in as like harmonious and happy version as humanly possible, and then other people just naturally follow, right?
Yes, absolutely. Well, there's a lot of sensitive souls out there who see that pain, you know, that, and then that's why I was crying earlier because you were talking about the sadness. And it's actually in my manifesto, so I can't wait till that's graphically ready. I'm going to send it to you because there's a
yeah.
line in there that is about the sadness that I feel is knowing that there's another way.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So when people are sensitive souls, sometimes they see that pain and they want to fix it out there. But they themselves aren't feeling good.
That's heavy. Heck yes. Heck yes. Say that. what I'm hearing is exactly, we want to heal it out there. And my belief is that, you know, Dr. Karen, you're a reflection of me. I'm a reflection of you. The reason the stuff that you like about me is stuff that you like about yourself. The stuff that you don't like about me is stuff that you don't like about yourself, and vice versa, right? And so that thing, that's why, in my mind, that's why it's such powerful times is because all of the things that we're noticing, that pain out there, it's just a signpost. It's pointing back. It's saying, hey, inside you, there's something like this that you need to heal, right? Inside you, there's something that wants healing because your attention is so brought to this pain, whether it be disconnection or scarcity or whatever it is, that's something in you that needs to be healed, right? That's when we know something. That's when we find the juicy stuff is like, whoa, I'm super, super triggered right now. That means there's something there, right?
Absolutely.
Like if we're triggered by something, if you said, hey, Taylor, you've got skinny legs, then chances are I actually would be triggered by that because I'm self-conscious of my skinny legs,
oh,
right? But if you said, Taylor, you've got weak shoulders, I'd be like, no, I don't. Because I don't, because my belief is that I don't. I'm really happy with my shoulders, not happy with my calves, but I mean, I'm happy with them. I'm touching them right now. I love you guys. Thank you. You get me everywhere. I really appreciate it. Like, baller, like, we're all a team. And, I would only be triggered by the things that I think are true, right? And so when we look outside that's the best way to find out what in us needs healing is look outside of it. What are we outraged at? What really triggers us? It's something inside, right? And then we get to do the work, and the work can show up in all different ways. It can show up going to like ALA or MITT or Landmark or Hoffman or all of these like amazing deep dive personal development courses. I've only taken part in one of those, but I've heard amazing things about all of them. And or we can go to plant medicine. We can go to like EMDR, we can go to therapy, we can go to tapping, we can go to all of these things. The thing that's kind of crazy to me, Dr. Karen, I don't know if you resonate with this, but is that we go through life and we're like get triggered by something, we realize that something inside us is kind of off, potentially we get that far, hopefully, and then we're like, oh, it's really too bad I've got this real traumatic thing that's really impacting my life. Too bad I've got that for the rest of my life. It's like, wait, what? Wait, have you been to a bookstore? Have you seen it? If you can go to Amazon, see how many books people have written on this topic that can help you get through this topic. Do you know how many freaking coaches there are? Do you know how many people that do EFT tapping and whatever it is, cognitive therapy and all of the things? There's so much help out there. It is bananas. You could have an obsession with, ripping leaves off plants, and there are 100 books on how to stop ripping leaves off plants and why you do it, right? Like, does that make sense? Obviously,
absolutely. Yeah, I get it. And going back to, when you were in this bankrupt place, and it's interesting because I remember saying to someone who was having trouble, they're going to lose their home or whatever, and I said, hey, I really highly recommend this book, and you'd be like, well, I can't get to the library, and, excuse after excuse. And I've done it, too. I totally have done it. So I totally own that I understood where this person was coming from because I made all of those excuses before. But I think that if you really, really get it, that it's coming from the inside out, some people just do have to go down to the very, very, very bottom. I don't know if you believe this, but sometimes people have to feel what we consider the bottom of the barrel before they'll make a shift. Like it has to be painful enough.
Let's say here, that's a good example because in your example of someone who's going through a really bad financial, hardship, and that was making excuses that you couldn't get to the library. In reality, their words are saying, I can't get to the library. And what they're actually saying, which is way deeper and way more profound, what actually matters is if I go to the library and I pick up a book that is going to potentially help me through the situation, in doing that, I need to take ownership over this situation. As long as I don't take ownership over the situation, I can pretend that it wasn't my fault and I don't have to take ownership over the situation. Because if I take ownership over the situation, that means I start having to take ownership over everything in my life, meaning all of those things that I've labeled as bad, which are all just growth mechanisms, but all those things that I've labeled as bad, I then have to start taking ownership over. So someone going to the library and getting a book on how to be, better at finances is obviously way, way, way deeper. And getting someone to, that's just like a tiny little, grain of hay or whatever the saying is. But the deeper, it's the deep work. As soon as someone does that, they start to having to open their minds, taking ownership over themselves. Then once they take ownership over themselves, they have to start taking ownership over their community and over the world and over the universe. Like, it just starts to happen. So taking that one step sounds like, well, it's up the street, pick up the book, you know, get a library card. But in reality, you're saying start taking ownership over your fucking life. And that is a really, really hard thing to get people to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, you read that perfectly. Exactly. Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Now, from
and
your perspective...
Like, or go, sorry, ahead, go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, from your perspective as a guy, you know, growing up as a sensitive, what kind of, like, practical things did you do to deal with fluorescent lights, to deal with crowds, to deal with... You know, because there's a lot of folks that,
yeah,
first of all, try to pretend that it doesn't exist. But then I find that the kids get drained, and they get,
yep,
irritable, and they get, there's a biggie, addicted.
Totally. So, okay, I'm going to give you, this might be some weird, potentially answers for your question. It's gonna come back and make perfect sense, but it's going to go a little roundabout, which obviously you're probably getting, that's the vibe. Here's the thing is, like, when we go into an airport and it's, like, really bright and there's lots of crowds, or we go into CVS or whatever it is and it's really bright and it's annoying, and we don't take the action to protect ourselves, like just wearing sunglasses or wearing earplugs or having, you know, meditation music on or meditating in the airport or doing yoga in the airport while everyone's around. What's interesting is that what I find is that a lot of times people don't do that because they're scared of what people think, right? Because if they really acknowledge in themselves, like, it's too bright for me here, it's too noisy, and then therefore took action to remedy it, a lot of times people don't take action. I know myself in the past haven't taken action because I'm worried about what other people will think. Even though I know my body needs to stretch and needs to do yoga, I'll just,
yes,
sit in that chair in the airport and just, like, get more blood clots in my knees and and wait, you know, and wait till I'm by myself so I can by myself do my practices. If you're a sensitive person, those practices that are going to bring you back to feeling normal and comfortable, you can actually do those anywhere you want, anywhere in the world. You can do it right now. And typically the thing that holds us back from that is caring what people think. So that's where I like to start, is like, how do I erode this care, this big mountain of worry about what other people think? How can I take tangible steps to care less what people think and therefore embrace my own boundaries, therefore, like, really cater to myself rather than catering to society, which kind of subconsciously points us in the direction of just doing what everyone else wants to do? And so some tangible steps into giving less fucks about what people think. Here's number one, but the one that's made the biggest difference in my life is thinking, what are the feelings that I get when I care what other people think? Do I feel awkward? Do I feel judged? Do I feel anxious? Do I feel whatever those things are? And then actively putting myself in those situations and doing something a little bit weird in those situations. Like, when, like, in the airport, airports are always like a training ground for me. I'll go to an airport. I remember one time I was in San Francisco and I was, like, really nervous to do a talk that I had coming up. I was really nervous about it. I'm like, you know what? I feel anxious. I feel like I'm going to be judged and all that stuff. So I'm going to make myself feel like that right now. And I'm going to show myself that it's not going to kill me. And so I got on one of those, like, moving sidewalks, you know, like the rubber things you get on the airport.
Yes.
And it moves you. Anyways, I got on one of those and I did my whole talk while on that, standing sideways. And I didn't know anyone in the airport. I had a woman. I went up to this woman and I had her film me doing it. And I did the whole talk on the moving sidewalk. And people are
so
looking
at me.
So
she had to, like, run with you when she was filming?
No, no, no. I got her to sit, like, in a chair that no one could see that she was filming me, right?
Oh,
so
okay.
So I'm on this moving sidewalk, and I'm doing my talk, hands animated, up in the air, doing the whole thing. And every part of my body is screaming to stop. Every cell in my being is like, stop this, stop this, stop this. Because it's tapping into that deep caveman emotion of if I do something weird, I get kicked out of the community. If I get kicked out of the community, saber-tooth tiger is going to eat me. I'm going to die. You know, doing something weird equals death. That's why we feel so awkward doing stuff
that's
that is
right,
like, against the status quo. And so I put myself in that situation, like, doing it afterwards, I feel incredible. I feel euphoric because I didn't die and I did it. And I showed that I am above caring what everyone else thinks. You know, like, taking those actions. Another one is, like, I'll go on a plane. I don't know why it's all this like air travel stuff, but I'll go on a plane and I'll go to the front. Oh, it's because I usually get nervous for talks, right? I'll still get nervous for talks, even though I've done 100 of them. And I'll get to go to the front of the plane and I'll force myself to do deep lunges all the way to the back of the plane. Like, and I make myself look people in the eye. So if you're in seat 13C and you've got that aisle seat, I'm going to be looking deep into your soul as I lunge deeper than you've ever seen. As I'm walking by, don't worry, you're only going to feel awkward for like 3 seconds while I'm looking at you, but I do these deep lunges all the way to the back, which shows I don't care what people think. And the last, if you thought that was good, the last Dr. Karen, as I signed up to be a nude model, not because I look good naked at all, but because it was the most awkward thing I could possibly think of doing. And I walked into that room terrified, and it was cold in the room, by the way, and that affects things mainly on the male side. And it was cold. I was like, so I get in there and they're like, oh, did you bring a robe? And I'm like, what? No, I didn't. Why, what do you mean, did I bring a robe? And they're like, oh, okay, it's all good. Then you just don't have a robe on during the breaks. I'm like, okay. And so I sat there on this chair in this weird, like kind of weird pose where I was like leaning forward and like with my elbows on my knees. Again, not a good look for a naked dude, right? And so I'm there naked for 3 hours in front of these people, can't move for 20 minutes at a time. And then on the breaks, I don't have the robe, so I'm butt naked. And people are like, hey, so you ever done this before? And I'm like, oh my God. But in that moment, I was like, I even found myself like turning to the side for some reason. And I was like, Taylor, you fucking face them. You stand straight at them, put your hands on your hips and have a conversation. And so I did. I stood there like butt naked, having all these different incredibly awkward yet massively freeing talks. Anyways, bring it full circle, like I promised, is when we can start caring less about what people think, we can start caring more about how we feel, we can start honoring how we feel, and we all have the tool set. Bring your crystals with you, bring your sage with you, do your stretching, do your meditating, put your earplugs in, put your sunglasses on, you know, create an environment, regardless of the actual outside environment, that makes you feel comfortable. And then we can go through the day, first of all, not giving an F what people think feels incredible. Add on top of that, giving ourselves that self-healing and nurturing practice. When we love ourselves, and this gets into like something bigger, is like when we fully love ourselves and honor ourselves, imagine when people interact with us, how they feel. Because if they feel like, wow, that guy really honors himself, he really, you know, really takes care of himself, he could do that for me. You know, like I feel safe in this person's presence because they know what they need and they give it to themselves. People start feeling safe in your presence. People start opening up to you more. People start bonding with you more, connecting with you more. All of it happens from honoring what is going to make you the most comfortable.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Boy, and I thought I felt weird sitting on the ground doing yoga in the middle of the airport. And my husband's like,
no,
what are you doing?
Do
what
it.
What are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, where are you going?
Exactly.
I'd be like, oh, a bar. I can put my leg up on a bar. And I'd do these ballet stretches. And, you know,
yeah.
Walk by and they kind of smile. And, you know.
Exactly. And they're, you know what they're thinking? Damn, she's smart.
Or
good.
Damn, she's flexible.
Oh, yeah, she's super flexible. And people can start small too, right, Dr. Karen? They can start like,
yeah,
just wear some sunglasses in the drugstore from now on. Just wear some like discreet earplugs if that's what you want to do. Or when someone talks to you that's like a total energy vampire, just be like, you know what? I'm really kind of in my own zone right now. I'm just going to focus on some meditation, but thanks for starting this conversation. I really appreciate it. And, you know, maybe we'll have it another time. You know, like every time that we can exercise our own boundaries, our bodies, our subconscious just gives us like the biggest round of applause and they're like, thank you. And that's what, you know, catalyzes health and all the good stuff.
Yeah, that's great. Now, what do you, maybe you're not around these people as much as before, but like, what did you say to maybe friends or people you met who were, I don't know, emanating the old masculine persona, you know, the rough,
you're
tough,
so PC,
whatever. Like, what do you say to those people when you're with
them?
Oh,
I mean, here's the thing, is I very much have the old persona, the masculine in me. If someone wants to like compete and have an arm wrestle, I'll be the first person to arm wrestle them. So I wouldn't be able to say that. I like, here's the thing, is like, that it's like this word conscious, right? Like people, this woman messages me on Instagram the other day, and I had been talking about how I was on these two dating apps, and she goes, you know, how is Bumble and Hinge? I said, they're great. I love them. They're so fun. And she's like, but are they good for finding conscious partners? And I just burst out laughing. I was like, it's not up to Hinge and Bumble to find you a conscious partner. It's up to your intent and your clarity for you to find a conscious partner. Hinge and Bumble are just like walking in a mall, right? You're not going to expect to see all quote unquote conscious people in a mall. You know what I mean?
Well, there must be conscious dating apps. I don't know. I'm not in
there. There is.
Arena,
totally. Here's the thing. There are conscious dating apps, and people are freaking people, right? Like how many Christians have been like, oh, I can't believe this guy at the church screwed me over. He's a person. Just because of what he does on Sunday and what he prescribes to doesn't make him not a person. And it's the same thing. Like, sure, I'm like, let's say I would identify as being a conscious male, I guess, maybe because I'm more conscious than I was yesterday. But sure, I'm the stereotypical, like, snag, sensitive new age guy. And in reality, I still have every other bit inside of me. I have the dickhead who, when I play sports, I'm trash talking people and I'm trying to get in their head so that they play worse and then I win. I still have the super competitive person in me, right? And we all have this. I think I'm totally getting ramped up here, Dr. Karen, but we all have every single bit inside us. I'm not just light and I'm not just dark. Right? I'm a fucking rainbow. I want to be every single bit and every single bit in between. I want to be the competitive guy at Monopoly who never loses. I want to be the person who can hold space for anyone and cry in front of my team. I want to be the person who can be the best partner in the world and work through the ups and the downs of the relationship and get to the other side and grow and expand together. And I want to be the person who holds a crystal when he goes to sleep at night and so he can access like higher realms. We're all of those people. And I think it's in the denial of any of those parts that actually creates suffering and discord inside us. When we can like fully embrace every bit of us and realize I'm a human being and I'm no different than the people that I'm no different than Hitler. And when you can realize
I often use that analogy. Thank you.
You have the deep, the dark, the depth that every human on earth has had. You have that inside you. Hate to break it to you, but you do. Only when you acknowledge that, can you say, and by the way, I also have the same stuff as Jesus. You know, I also have the same stuff as Buddha. You know, I have also have all of that stuff. Like my favorite quote by Osho says that, you know, for trees' branches to reach heaven, its roots have to reach hell. Like the deeper that we can acknowledge that we have all of this dark, the further up we can expand and acknowledge that we have all of this light and then enjoy everything in between rather than being like, ooh, I was triggered. I'm not really conscious right now and therefore I'm unhappy. Be like, hey, this is part of the human experience. We signed up for this when we came down here, right?
That's
right. And we can actually enjoy each step instead of denying them and hoping for one perpetual feeling.
Oh, that's so helpful. That's great. Awesome. That's awesome. I was definitely triggered before a lot by you know, those people that would criticize me for being lazy or selfish, my mom would say that, and I was totally triggered by that. And then I realized that I fought against it so much that I burnt myself out, trying not to be lazy, trying not to be selfish. And it made me sick, literally. Yeah, so I was like,
yeah. You know, and the most powerful thing is to go, I am selfish.
Yeah.
And I'm giving. And sometimes I'm a brat and I want people to like say sorry when they shouldn't even have to say sorry. You know what I mean? Like you are selfish, Dr. Karen, and you're incredibly giving and contributing and philanthropic and altruistic and empathetic. You're all of those things. And it's, you know, it's an acknowledgement that like, yeah, sometimes I slip into selfish mode and that's because I'm a human being. Mm-hmm. I think that's where the freedom is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that, you know, the separation of that's a bad person or an evil person and this is a good person and all that kind of stuff. I, you know, one of my things I share with my students is we don't, you know, as far as the dark is concerned, we don't bind the dark, we don't punish the dark or anything like that. We love them into the light. So we have to love those dark parts of ourselves as well.
Exactly.
In order to be able to do that.
Love that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So what would you want young boys and men to know based on your experience? If you had, you know, one, two, maybe three, like top tips, what would you say to them?
Yeah, I would reiterate that, you know, what we just talked about is like, you're everything. You know what? I hate to be really honest. if you grew up in Rwanda and you were born, let's say, in 1978, and therefore you were, what am I thinking, or maybe, anyways, if you were around, let's say, the age of 23 in Rwanda in 1994, I had the bad math, I think it was like 71, you'd have to be born. And if you're around that age, if you were a young man in that time, you and you grew up in the exact same situation as the Hutu tribe grew up in, or a lot of people that committed the Rwandan genocide, that you would have done it right alongside with them. If you grew up in the same circumstances that a lot of people that have committed the most horrific crimes on earth, if you grew up exactly like they did, you would have done exactly what they did because you would have been them. And that is really hard for us to admit sometimes, because we want to be like, you know, the light warriors, the light workers and all that kind of stuff. And when we can fully admit that we have all of that dark inside us, then you can fully admit that you've got all the light inside you at the same time. So what, that's just like a random, potentially massively extreme example of just embracing every part of you, not denying any part of you, not feeling bad or shameful for things that you're drawn to, like fully accepting all of you. That is the beginning of, in all of these wonderful books, that's the beginning of real healing, is like full self-acceptance. And it's just, it's incredible the results that, in my mind, that you'll see in your life, in the form of other people, in your business, in everything, when you fully accept every part of yourself. That in essence is freedom. Then it actually doesn't matter what you're doing in business. It doesn't matter what your relationships are like. It doesn't matter. None of that stuff matters, because you're truly free. And because it doesn't, none of it matters, and you're truly free, all of the other stuff is good. You know what I mean? It's like that paradox.
Oh, that is beautiful. Now, I heard from you that you're writing a book on empathy. Is that true?
You know what? I did a really deep dive. Let's say just a real deep dive recently, and some things came to light that the reasoning behind a lot of my goals in my life were to prove that I was a good person. And I didn't know that.
Oh, I know that one.
Yeah, I genuinely was unconscious of it. I knew it to a point, but what came to light earlier was some really interesting childhood trauma that I had gone through, and that was really forming my life. I'm 37 years old, and I just realized that a specific incident when I was 6 years old was dictating what I came up with for goals. I thought I was setting these goals because I was ambitious. I thought I was setting these goals because I wanted to help humanity and blah, 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 blah. And I wanted to save people. And in reality, it was coming from a place I wanted to prove that I don't ruin things. I wanted to prove that I'm a good boy, you know?
Yeah.
And so my thoughts on writing a book, my thoughts on even speaking anymore, like actively pursuing speaking engagements, has really shifted. And so I'm in a moment in time right now of feeling into, where does every intent that I have come from? And is it coming from a place of wanting to prove myself to my dad? Is it coming from a place of wanting to prove that I'm a good person and that I don't screw things up? Or is it coming from a natural, genuine download flow from the universe of like, here's what you're meant to do on this earth, and this is what lights you up, this is what you have the most fun doing, and I'm consciously choosing to only endeavor into things that are coming from as clean, pure a place as possible. Of course, they're not, you know, I'm a human being, so it's always going to come through the filter of my experience, but I'm endeavoring to go a level deeper and release the need to prove myself. And that writing that book, even though it was going to be on empathy, what a big layer of reason of why I was going to write it was to prove myself. And I don't feel the need to do that at this moment. And so the book is on, quote unquote, on pause.
Gotcha. Oh, okay. Well, that makes so much sense. And that's a fantastic example for all of us, really, because there are always those parts where we just think we're doing it for a good reason. But the good reason is laced with, you know, like you said, trying to prove myself. And sometimes doing the opposite is trying to be rebellious. You know, you said I'm not, I can't do that. Dang it, I'm going to do it just to prove you wrong. You know, all those kinds of energies. Wow, congratulations for getting to that degree of consciousness around that. Woo, deep.
Yeah, feels a lot lighter.
Wow, that's amazing. So right now it feels like a big open space for you as far as your future or your near future, like so many different possibilities. Sometimes we get attached to, I don't know about you are not sounding that way, but sometimes I or, you know, we get attached to where we're headed because we're so invested. You know, we have so much money invested in this and so many people invested in this. And then we get to that place, we're like, maybe this isn't where I want to go. Boy, that could be super scary.
Yeah, it's a lot of open space. And I'm down with the open space. I think the need to fill open spaces is annoying. You know, it's it's like it's an addiction. The addiction to being busy is one that I've decided to drop. So I'm just listening. You know, I'm really listening to what I'm drawn to. At the moment, I'm 37. Something clicked when I was 35, and I decided that I wanted to start a family. Or I shouldn't say I decided. I just clicked. I wanted to start moving towards starting a family. I don't have a girlfriend, but so that's probably step number one. But I find myself, when I see a family with young kids, I find myself drawn to it more than I've ever had in my life. I'm like, oh, I want that. That my body is wanting that. So I'm going to follow that. And I wouldn't be surprised when we do our next show together that I'm probably complaining about how little sleep I've got because I have a child. That seems to be the thing with people that are parents. They want to like brag to you about how little sleep they got. Oh, last night I got up 4 times. I'm like, wait, am I giving you a cookie, a medal? You chose to have a child. You're a human being that is reliant on you to live. Obviously, you got up at those times.
Right. No, I asked my resident one time, I said, what's easier, doing on call, you know, or you know, not sleeping because of the kid? And he said, actually on call. I said, you got to be kidding. Really? He's like, yep. I was like, wow, that was intense. You know, he said it was harder to be a dad and wake up that often rather than being on call. I don't know why, but that made me think that really must be challenging for people.
Yeah. So Dr. Karen, I'm so happy that you had me on and we got to dive into this stuff. You are an absolute inspiration. And it meant so much to me when we first talked that people like you exist, because you're giving a lot of freedom to a lot of people to acknowledge what they are like. And I really hope that our talk today has done that for people too, is like anyone
Absolutely.
Listening, you're not alone. You are a part of a growing group of humans on the earth that are here to shift things. And the reason that you're not equipped with this like hardcore attitude is because that comes from the same energy that created everything that's in place right now. We are here to shift things in a soft, gentle, ascendant way because we don't want to create the same thing over again. Right. So I think that's what we're here for. And I think we all embrace our softness and our sensitivity together, which means starts with embracing our full selves. And then we create the kind of world that we're here to create.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Oh, thank you so much for being on the show, Taylor. It's been wonderful and inspiring and tearful and everything in between. For those listening in, I want to thank you also for being present, for listening to the show, for learning more about your sensitivity and how to harness that as a superpower. And to know more about Taylor, you can go to theideacollective.org and his organization that helps speakers and teachers, trainers, mentors get their message out there to change the world and make the world a better place. So again, that's theideacollective.org. So thank you, Taylor, and thanks, everyone. Until next time, bye for now.
Thanks, Dr. Karen.